And now, Tim Dillon is going to hell! With Tim Dillon and Ray Kump.
Episode. It's Tim Dillon. I'm joined here by my co-host Ray Kump.
Hello.
And the great and one of the newest members of the Gas Digital family, Bo Deedle. Thank you for coming on.
Well, good evening, guys, and thanks for inviting me.
I appreciate it. Back from Lake Como, Italy.
Yeah, the trip I took, how about on a Global Express? So my friend's daughter got married. He says, I'm going to send a private jet for you and Margo. Come out there, bring your toothbrush. He had his 220-foot yacht there. And we were in the most beautiful place. Everything was set up 4 days. They had this, the whole town's been, there was a chapel on the top of Capri, Anna Capri. And it was fantastic. Every day he had things to do with the big yacht. I've never experienced 4 days in paradise the way this was.
Right.
Lunches, breakfast.
Yeah.
It was really
cool.
No,
I understand. My cousin got married upstate, so I understand. You know, I get it. Well, I get a good destination wedding.
No, it was fucking cool. I just got back last night. I flew into Teterboro last night. A little bumpy coming in with the weather, but
yeah.
It was cool.
Well, you've got those kind of friends. You're like a New York institution. You've been around a long time. You know everybody.
Yeah.
You know everything. Probably, you know, things you can't say, things you can say.
I can say anything.
But, right.
I know everybody from one side to the other side. The rich, famous, and the unfamous.
Right. What is it? Has it always been New York for you? Has there ever been another city? No.
Right now, there's a fucking puddle of New York drainage out of me.
Right.
I am New York. I was born here when I was a detective here for a lot of years during the hairy times. And I've had the business. I've been very fortunate to do some acting and been some of the great movies that are out there. And I just, I don't stop, man. I got like full fucking throttle. You know why? Because when the time comes that it's all over, it's all over. So get every bit of you out of your life. Don't sit back and say, I should have. You want to write a book? Write a fucking book. I wrote 3 books. Guys tell me, you know, I was a better detective. I could have wrote a book. I says, go write the book. Don't be angry or upset or jealous about anybody. Do it. And I've done it, and I'm a very happy man.
So you were, how long were you a detective for?
I came on the police department in 1970, and I had to retire in 85. When I jumped out of a fucking plane with some Abba Dabba Doo, Saudi Arabian princes, and I broke my leg and my ankle in half, and that was the end of my career.
You jumped out of a plane with Saudi princes,
yeah.
What were you doing on the plane with them?
Well, I used to have a bodyguard company when I was a New York City detective, because I wasn't making too much money.
Sure.
And then I used to bodyguard these Saudi Arabian princes, and we used to travel all over the world. And this one time I had locked up the guy, Christopher Thomas. I think he's probably the mayor of some fucking some city now in America. He killed 10 people, including 8 kids, in the Palm Sunday Massacre. So all of a sudden they had come into New York City, the Saudi Arabian princes, and I was all over the TV's front page of the papers. They go, oh, you're so famous. He goes, we go tomorrow to La Jolla on his private jet. And I says, well, I'm supposed to be at City Hall. We're getting promoted. And I said, oh, fuck it. I've been up for, I said, I've been working real hard. I called my lieutenant. I says, you know, I have to go away for a couple of days. He goes, what are you talking about? You're supposed to be getting promoted. And I says, well, I'm going to go away. I'm taking some vacation. So I fly out there. We get out to La Jolla. We land in San Diego. And La Jolla, California is beautiful on a mountain, on a hilltop and all that. And then when we get out there, all of a sudden the Arab says, bull, we're going to have a big party, celebrate tonight. I said, oh, that sounds fucking good, right? Next thing is, he calls up Alex the Madam. You ever hear Alex the Madam?
No.
In Beverly Hills. And they order about 20 off-duty actresses. These weren't hookers. they weren't hookers. They weren't out-and-out hookers.
Right.
But they were young gals.
Escorts.
Beautiful. And what they did is they got paid $2,500 to go to a party. And, you know, I like drinking my vodka and whatever. And so we had this party. And now the Arabs are getting all tuned up. They were doing some fucking shit. But I never played with any kind of drugs like that. And all I told the girls that were there is you'll get paid the next day. If you steal something, you're going to get your fucking asses locked up. Have a good time. So we had a big party. Now the princes, they go like this. Two of them, there was Abdulaziz and Fahad bin Turki. Fahad bin Turki subsequently was killed 2 years ago in Yemen. He was a general, and they blew him up in Yemen. But now all of a sudden they go, "Boy, you're so brave. Did you ever jump out of a fucking plane?" I says, "No." Now they had 100 jumps each. So they go, "Are you afraid?" I says, "I ain't afraid of nothing." Next day I'm sitting in a DC-3 with the door off with a fucking football helmet on. And I'm saying to myself, what am I doing? And next day they tell me, "You pull this. You have auxiliary chute. You pull this." So I get, first Arab went out, Muhammad went out. And next thing is I go, I know how to do it now. I'd studied it. But you're supposed to come out like this, put your head out with your arms. I just went head first. I was tumbling. I pulled everything. All of a sudden, there was a parachute. There was one thing they didn't teach me, how to fucking land. And I hit the ground about 30 miles an hour, and I broke my leg in half, compound fracture, and my ankle.
Gee.
And that was the end of my police career. Then Nick Pileggi put me on the cover of New York Magazine, and that was the beginning of my new life. It was probably the best break of my life.
Right. Now, was there any, back when you were on the force, you were doing the bodyguard, you had a bodyguard company. Was there any, like, they didn't care about that? They didn't care that you were moonlighting as security for the Saudi royal family?
There was no, you're not supposed to be working. There was no moonlighting then.
Yeah.
You weren't allowed to, but okay. I was doing it.
Right.
I was making probably $28,000, $30,000.
Right.
I couldn't wipe your ass with that money.
Right.
And I like nice things. So I used to do this. I used to make a couple $100,000 a year with the Saudis.
Yeah.
And I used to take take vacation. Yeah. Instead of taking overtime, I would take time off a couple months. And I'd travel. I'd go to Marbella, go to Paris. They had the George Sang Hotel, Prince de Galles. And I used to stuff the money in my socks when I came back. I never claimed the fucking money.
Yeah.
But I used to piss it away as fast as I make it. I was like a fucking sailor on leave. But I had all this cash, had fancy cars, nice clothes. People thought I was on the take.
Right.
I was working. That's
right.
It. Yeah.
What attracted you to law enforcement originally?
Oh, I never want to be no fucking cop.
It doesn't sound like it. Yeah, no. It doesn't sound.
You got to remember. You got to remember. Bo Dietl grew up in Ozone Park.
Right.
Bo Dietl grew up with all the gangsters. John Gotti, Ralphie and Joey Scopo, all the guys. Now, when I was growing up, my mom's from Catania, Sicily. So I'm Italian and my father's German, hence Dietl. Sounds like a fucking, a Nazi fucking name. But he came here in 1915, right before World War I. And my mom came from Sicily. And my father was very strict. The only thing I remember what my father used to be is he used to have a good hand, right hook, and also the belt buckle, FD. Used to get embedded on my ass when he used to beat me with the strap, but I needed it. I was a tough kid because he used to say, "Be home at 8 o'clock at night." I had to be home. Otherwise, I would have wound up with the guys. They were going to the airport, Kennedy Airport. It wasn't Kennedy. It was Idlewild then. And they used to do hijackings and shit. And I didn't get down because my father was dead. I was always afraid of my father. And I always worked. I worked. I worked. I worked. So one day, I'm hanging out on the corner. We used to hang out on 101st Avenue. And 98th Street. That's right near where Gotti eventually put his club. And I never forget, it was a Saturday. And I said, "Where's everybody?" They're going to take the cop test. It was one of these walk-in thing. And I said, "Cop test? Who wants to be a fucking cop?" So I went over to John Adams High School. I signed in. I took the test. How hard was the test? They showed you a fucking clock. What time is it? Like 3 o'clock or something. Well, I think I got a 99 on it. It was a fucking moron test, but I never want to be a cop. But one thing is, so now I was working. I worked as a laborer, a concrete laborer. You were like a slave. I'm hard work. Then I became an iron worker on the old World Trade Center. I worked on a permit, and I was up there in the cold steel. They called me once, twice, three times for the police. And they said, "Well, if you don't take it, we're taking you off the list." I was almost 20 years old. And I said, "Is this what I want for the rest of my life. I looked at guys who were 30, who were all weathered. They looked like they were 50. I actually saw four people die on the construction jobs, falling through elevator shafts off the building. And I was what they call a connector, ironworker connector. You use a stud wrench, you line up the girder, and you put one bolt, and then you had the bolt-up gang will come, and they would spot weld it. So I'm up there, and again, it was freezing. This is the original World Trade Center, Tower A, Tower B. So I said, fuck, do I want to do this? I said, let me try this cop shit. My whole life, I hated bullies. And I'm a little guy. I had to sleep on the floor to make 5'8". They actually had a height requirement. So, but when I was a kid, I used to fight the bullies, guys that used to pick on people. I hated that. So I'll never forget. I was in the academy. Gray uniform, and it happened. I looked off the roof of the academy, and there's this guy going up the fire escape. He wasn't a fireman. And I knew it was like a light that went off, and he was burglarized the apartment. I ran off the roof. I run down the street. I chase him into the apartment. I'm chasing him 5 blocks. I tackle him, get him into the fucking headlock, and he had 2 rings. And I bring him back to the precinct. Next thing is I felt like, wow, you really did something. And then I became a cop, and I don't want to get too much into it, but I volunteered to be one of the first decoy cops back in the early 70s, where I was mugged in a documentation 500 times. I was stabbed, shot at, hospitalized, 30 times, fractured skull. And I loved being that. I became a homicide detective. My partner, Tommy Collarin, who's not with us anymore, we broke some of the big cases in New York. And I loved being a cop until that day in the desert in California, Perris, California, P-E-R-R-I-S, was when I broke my fucking leg and my ankle, and then I had to retire. I never thought I'd retire. But to be honest, if I didn't retire, I probably would have gotten locked up. Because right. I was an old type of cop, and I used to go after the gang members. Nicky Bonds, you guys are too young.
I remember, but I know.
But they had the Hayes brothers, were his enforcers. I used to get locked in a cell. I used to carry brass knuckles.
Oh, and the cop?
As a cop, yeah. But I mean, I never killed anybody. So statute of limitations, fucking over. Anyway.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you solve some, you know, huge cases, but do you think most people who are, you know, never been near a law enforcement, like, would be surprised? Or maybe, you know, you could tell me the amount of cases that, like, just don't go unsolved.
Well, you know, like, if you compare it, we used to have our homicide clearance rate was very high, like 85% of the people would get caught.
Oh, wow.
Get like Chicago right now. I think they have something like 10% clearance. That means 90% of the time you're going to get away with murder. And New York was a different place. We used to have 2,000, 2,200 murders a year. Robberies, hundreds of thousands of robberies. I remember working up in Harlem. We'd have 55-gallon drums, fire, 3 of them on each block. Fire coming out, drug dealing, shootings were all over the place. It was a wild, wild west. It was a different era. And it was tough, but you know one thing? You had a lot of respect. Not like today. I mean, right. Now the cops, they get laughed at. They walk into a fucking precinct, and they walk over to the cops and say, yeah, I'm going to fuck your daughter in the ass. Fuck you. Suck my dick. I mean, where are we going with this?
Right. Yeah.
Where are we going with
this? What do you think? What do you credit for really turning the city around? A lot of people say it's Giuliani. Some people said it's the economy. Some people say it was, you know, all kinds of this. There's a theory that it was abortion, that more poor children were aborted so they didn't grow up to be criminals. That's literally a theory.
Yeah, for sure.
What do you, I mean, you lived through it. What do you think it was?
Well, we locked up a lot of people. A lot of people went to jail, and we got them off the streets. And a lot of them died, too. A lot of them were involved with drugs, and they died. I don't know, that word, cyclical? What's that word?
Cyclical, yeah.
Yeah, it just changed. It was so turbulent in the 1970s. I think the drug usage was more prevalent. Now the drug use is bad, real bad. 1,500 dead last year in overdoses. But in the 70s, you didn't even count them. And, I mean, people were dying of heroin overdoses then, and then cocaine came in. I don't know. It's something that... It was just such tremendous craziness on the streets. I could have taken you anywhere in New York, whether it be Bushwick, Harlem, East New York, Bedford-Stuyvesant. It was just crazy. And I don't think it was one person that stopped it. I think it was the influx of locking up so many people, sending them away, and getting all the bad people off the streets. The last few years, the crime has gone down. They went after the gangs. And in Chicago, that's the same thing. The gangs are committing the murders. 5,500 murders in the last 10 years in Chicago. That's more murders than Kabul fucking Afghanistan. And they could go after the gang members. They could use what they call the federal criminal RICO. Three or more people involved in the criminal enterprise, whether it be murder, drug dealing, stolen property, and you go out, you lock their motherfucking asses up. And I've been talking about this, and Obama was president from his hometown, never said a word, but if there's one questionable cop shooting, right away everybody, Black Lives Matter. Well, what about the lives of the little seven-year-old girl sitting on her porch in fucking Chicago getting shot in the head? I guess those lives are not the same. Where is Al Sharpton, the Black Lives Matter people in Chicago, demonstrating against all those poor African-Americans that are being gunned down? Where is it?
Wouldn't you say that when you look at a lot of these police shooting videos that it does seem to be a pattern, and I've never been a cop, and I know it's very difficult, but there does seem to be a pattern where black people are treated like second-class citizens by police in many cases. I mean, one guy was recently shot in his own home, or he was walking into his house.
He was in his apartment. A cop came home drunk, yeah, went into the wrong apartment and shot him.
It was an intruder and shot him. So, like, when you have stories like that, I agree with you to an extent. I understand what you're saying. It's like, why aren't we talking about violence that affects people in certain communities? But I mean, there does seem to be an issue. Do you think is it something that appears to be an issue in your mind and isn't an issue? Because to people that all we see is these videos all the time where you have 12-year-old kids getting shot, you have cops what is the issue? Is it a lack of training, or are they cherry picking these videos? What do you think the issue is?
Well, I think one of the issues they're really highlighted now. With the advent of these cell phone cameras, and all they're doing is they're showing it, and people are more, I mean, these things has happened. You gotta understand something, every day there's millions of interaction with cops and people, and the majority of the times it turns out okay. But when there's an incident and there are cops that are bad, same as doctors and everything else. So if you take a whole about cops, I would say the majority of the cops, the real majority, really are not out to kill somebody. Like, you take the Gardner incident in Staten Island, Eric Gardner. Now, I'm going to tell you something right now. You guys are pretty big boys, and I'm a little guy. And if I was to try to lock you up, I'd get you in a fucking headlock to bring you down, which I use dozens of times. Nobody dies. The fact that now they made the incident about, I can't breathe. Right, you can't breathe. He was God rest his soul, too. I hate the tragic accident that occurred. The kid Pantolino grabbed him in the headlock after he was trying to arrest him. He grabbed him down on the ground. He went down to the ground. At that point, he was saying, I can't breathe. He had acute asthma. He had a coronary problems, diabetes to the end results. He was physically, what happens when you have asthma, and I'm an asthmatic, if your throat closes up, if you don't get your inhaler in you, that can affect, and that's exactly what happened. He went into cardiac arrest, and at that point, the EMS people, they should have asked him, you're asthmatic, I can't breathe. If he's saying he can't breathe, that meant he was still breathing, if he could talk. Now, we had another instance, the way I compare
it. But doesn't it seem like it's such a relatively little thing, selling illegal cigarettes, versus what eventually ended up happening
to him? Well, it was a little thing, but the people of the community there were the ones that called the police and says, look, I own a store. He's selling cigarettes. And now they went to arrest him. He said, well, you're not going to arrest me. The point is, when a cop's in uniform, right, wrong, or indifferent, you have avenues that you should be able to go and do. Make your civilian complaint. Make the complaint. But a cop in uniform, we have to have some sort of respect there. Or what do you say about the guy walking to the station house? I'm going to suck my dick. He tells the female the female officer, I'm going to fuck your daughter in the ass, he tells you. I mean, at what point do you balance
it out? Well, I talked to Luis Gomez about that, and I told him it was wrong that he did that. I corrected him. But
do you think in a larger sense, though, look, you said in Chicago, they're going after the gangs, we went after the gangs here. And yeah, like that you have to go after that violence. And there is no easy answer, but do you think part of the issue is the way in a lot of these black inner city communities, the level of aggressive enforcement that took place throughout the 80s and 90s and up to today has kind of created a paradigm of, where they feel like they're being attacked by the police and it's kind of the police against the community. I know the cops want to help.
But you got to have a respect factor too. When I was a young man, a cop told you something, right? I got on my knees, 12 years old. I got hit by this Irish cop with his nightstick on my knees, and I still got lumps in my knees, and I was doing nothing wrong. I was sitting in the park after dark, and the guy came whacking the shit out of me. I went home. I told my father. I limped in there. My father said, "What happened to you?" I told him, "Nothing." "What happened to you?" He started smacking me around. I said, "I didn't do nothing. The cop. All I said was cop. He beat the shit out of me for the next half hour. My point is that we have to have some respect for police officers also. We have to respect the police, and the people have to respect the police, and the police have to respect the people.
Right.
And I mean, in reality, it's a hard line to understand unless you're out there. And here's one of my main beefs about the cops today. They don't have to be physically. I was in shape.
Right.
I mean, yeah. I could fight any man, and that's what I always used to do. I could have killed 15 people.
Right.
Did you ever get shot at 5 times from here to the wall? The guy threw the gun down and says, "You got me." I said, "Motherfucker, I got you." "Yeah, I got you right to the fucking hospital." Now, if you were to videotape me beating the shit out of him after he tried to kill me, shoots at me 5 times, you would go, "Bo was a brutal motherfucker."
Yeah.
Another guy stabbed me through my hand here, and with a knife, he escaped from Attica. He was a murderer.
Why are cops allowed to be in such bad shape today?
That was one of my things when I ran for mayor.
Yeah.
I would have had made sure that they were physical, because you got all, and then again, they force fed all these cops on there. Some of them are 85 pounds, 4 foot tall. There's no height requirement.
Right.
So what happens? You pull your gun out and against the wall there, like the thing that happened in Brooklyn, against the wall. You take your gun. The guy tells you to shove the gun up your ass. What do you do next?
Right.
Shoot the fucking person?
Right, right.
Now I got something cool to tell you about, and I'm into this deep. It's a thing called Bolla Rap, B-O-L-L-A Rap. And you heard it today. You're going to see it on 60 Minutes. It's the most phenomenal thing I've ever seen. It works on, it's a small, like a camera. And it shoots out a two Kevlar things in a matter of a second. And it wraps a person just like a Batman. You guys are going to laugh at me, think I'm out of my fucking mind. I have never seen anything like that. So now you have a guy with a knife in his hand, or even someone with a gun. This thing shoots out 25 feet. In 1 second, the person's wrapped up. Fish are lying around him. I've never seen it operate.
We have it right here.
Oh, really?
I mean, this is something that seems like it.
Who told you? No, Bolla Rap, you got to put on it.
Yeah.
You got this woman's all freaking tied up. What the hell is it? That's
the Bolla Rap. Video? What is this?
Yeah, she's taking it up the caboodle there. No, go Google Bolla Rap.
And so this is like Spider-Man, you're telling me.
No,
this
it's my fucking Batman.
I was like, Batman, okay.
Remember when your kid, he had the gun?
Yeah, the old Adam West Batman. Where like,
when
go
you
around,
see
yeah.
this, you're going to go like this, holy shit. And I told, this will revolutionize bad shootings for the fact that it's going to be minimized.
Right.
Now, imagine a guy standing over there and you see he's got a gun on his hip. You don't have to go after it. Next thing, and his fucking hands are like this. Now you can go over there. You can do what you got to do.
What do you think?
Here it goes. Watch. Watch this. But you can't realize the speed. Watch. Look.
Well, but he's still got the gun, right?
Hold on.
Okay. No, okay. I got you. There we go. Okay.
I mean, would you really... In a situation where a guy's got a gun, you know way better than me, but...
Hold on, watch this.
Yeah.
It is amazing. If you go YouTube this, Bolla Rap, B-O-L-A-R-A...
To me, this is the most...
W-R-A-P.
This is the most phenomenal thing I've ever seen, and I've worked with the taser bullshit.
Yeah.
This, to me, will be revolutionized policing.
Do you think... I don't have numbers in front of me, but like it seems like with tasers, because they're not lethal... a lot of cops use them much more liberally than they would with guns. You think we're gonna end up like in 5 years just bowler wrapping everyone in the streets?
Well, I'd rather bowler wrap someone than shoot somebody.
It's preferable, sure.
This is, I could just
you
tell
go these, home. You go home that fucking night, but he gets shot in the chest. You ain't going home.
No, I can tell you right now, there's gonna just give, cover the New York Post. Grandma gets bowler wrapped. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's coming.
Yeah,
it's
but
coming.
Wouldn't we rather that woman up in the Bronx with the baseball bat get bowler wrapped rather than fucking 9mm shot?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So perfect. I just love the idea of the new dimension of using force without using deadly force.
Right. Let's talk about the mafia for a second, because I know that you grew up in Ozone Park, New Park Pizza. Did you go there?
Of course.
Is that where the Gemini Lounge was, or is that a different area?
That's in Canarsie, right?
Okay.
Now, I grew up in a town, actually, which is Island Park in Long Island, which is, they had the Paulie from Goodfellas lived there, and this guy, Vinny Ocean, Vinny Palermo, his name was Vinny Ocean. He ran the Cavalcanti family in Jersey. They made a show about him called The Sopranos. So, like, a lot of my friends when I was growing up, their dads did whatever. And it was kind of, you know, I grew up in a very Italian town. It was a great town. We loved it. Everybody was safe. Nobody ever broke in anybody's house. You know, when my father came to, like, do something to my grandmother's boat, all these kids were like, who the hell are you? My dad's like, where the
Channel 80 over there?
Channel 80 is exactly over there. You know the whole thing. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's exactly
Gotti Jr. used to hang out there.
That's exactly what happened. There's like some crazy story happened. I don't know if you know anything about it, but there was some crazy story with him down there.
Oh, he gave a beating to somebody?
Gave a beating to somebody. I think it's some guy hit on his wife by mistake, and I think the guy ended up paralyzed or something.
Well, nobody wants to see anybody paralyzed.
Right.
And look, I'm not a person that supports violence. I don't care if it's organized crime or not.
Right.
I don't support that, but I did grow up with it, and I saw it, and I know
did
about
Did you know
it.
Gotti?
I grew up with the father.
So you grew up John Gotti?
Yeah.
What, as a kid, does he display traits where you go, oh, later on in life when he ends up being the guy, are you surprised by that? Or could you pick him out young and go, this guy's going to be interesting?
I was 12 years old when I first met John Gotti. He was with Joey Scopo. Joey Scopo was about 6'3", the toughest motherfucker you ever wanted to see. And I saw him walking through the feast. We used to have the Italian feast.
San Gennaro?
In Ozone Park.
Okay.
On 99th Street over there, 98th Street. And they would walk through the feast, and it was like Genghis Khan walking through there. And they would have like four or five guys following him.
How old
the feast.
Were they at that point? You're 12. How old are they?
Early 20s.
Okay.
Early 20s.
And they were a crew already.
Yeah, they were a crew already. And then what happens, fast forward, I get sucker punched by a guy with a fucking brass knuckles. I was at a place called Jet Burger in Howard Beach.
Okay.
And I had a little MG, a little 58 MG. And these guys were drunk, and they never said a word to me. My partner went in to get a couple of hamburgers. And then the next thing is they're sitting all over the car. It wasn't even my car. I borrowed one of my friends. I said, get off the fucking car. Guy didn't say nothing. He sucker punched me, cracked my tooth, opened my eye up. Next thing is I break the car antenna. I'm swinging at these guys. They see me bleeding. They run. My partner comes out. They take off. So I come back to the corner, and Ralphie Scopo was there, and I went to Jamaica Hospital. I got stitched up, and then we go looking for him. We go looking for these gang guys. Now I had Joey Scopo looking for him, a couple of my guys, and we couldn't find him. But we go back at 3 o'clock in the morning. My boy Ronnie, and he goes, "There's one of them. He's walking down the block with a girl." I says, "I don't remember what the fuck looks like." Ronnie says, "That's him." Comes out with a tire iron, and he fucking opened the back of his head. This guy was fucking hopping. Then I end up.
Were you a cop at this time? What were you?
I was 17 years
okay,
old.
Okay, no, all right.
So now the next thing that happens is I get word back to the corner, 101st Avenue, that this guy, Johnny Sears, that sucker punched me, wants to meet me under the old wooden bridge in Howard Beach. And I said, I want to fight this motherfucker. He sucker punched me. So I go back to the corner. Next thing is Joey Scopo says, you come with me. They want to meet at 12 noon at the old wooden bridge in old Howard Beach. I said, yeah, I'll fight the guy. He goes, they're going to kill you. They got the pagan guys, the motorcycle gang, the pagans is with this guy, and they're going to kill you. So he says, get in the car. So I get in there. He had a 1966 British Green Fleetwood four-door. So here's, you got to put this. I'm sitting in the back seat in the middle. On one side of me is John Gotti, Dennis Green, Foxy of New Lots is in the passenger seat, and Joey Scarpa was driving. We go to 106th Street, Atlantic Avenue. Joey goes up to the house. He comes out with a paper bag, two 38s. They're loading at 38s. I said, what the fuck is going on? He said, I want to fight the guy. He says, you'll just sit in the car. That's it. You're not getting out of the car. Foxy of New Lots, Joey Scarpa get out of the car. I stay in the car with John Gotti and Dennis Green. And the next thing is they come out from under the old wooden bridge. Machetes, long-haired guys, and I never seen two guys kick the living shit out of about 10, 15 guys. Now, the old wooden bridge was maybe 14 foot or high. That's all it was. And Joey Scarpa, the toughest guy, he was clocking guys one after another, one punch, knocking them out off the bridge. Next thing is we get back in the car. The cops come. All of a sudden, Joey comes out of the car. He must have known the cops because we got back and we went back to the corner. Then all of a sudden, I meet the same guy in the golden gloves, the guy we tie around, Johnny Sears. Now, fast forward, homicide detective Bo, I lock him up on a murder.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Life comes full circle.
Yeah.
You know? So, but you didn't stay running with Gotti and those guys.
No.
Interesting.
The father was Ralph Scarpa. He ran all the construction unions. He was the bagman for all five crime families. He was a Colombo family guy, but he ran all the construction, laborers, carpenters. You dished out the cash to all five crime families. So when the commission case occurred in 1985, the commission case was there where he mentions him doling out the money. That's when they locked up all the five crime family heads. So now Ralphie Scopo's there, and he tells me, you know, Bo, you can't hang out in the club anymore. You don't even know what we do. So make a long story. This is when I first become a cop. And he goes, you shouldn't come to the club anymore. I says, why, Ralph? I don't know. He goes, you don't even understand what we do. And I didn't understand, but I was 21 years old. I'm a young cop, and he was like a father to me.
Right.
And he says, you better stay out of the club. But I had a respect from all the wise guys. After my partner, Tom Collar, and I locked up the guys that raped and sodomized a nun, carved 27 crosses in a. So I was always called Bo the Cop. And I had respect for the wise guys because I never worked in organized crime because they wanted me to. How could I work in organized crime, have dinner with somebody, and then lock their ass up?
Right.
Wouldn't do that.
Do you think, when we talked before about like how New York City has changed and how the crime has gone down, do you think a lot of that, or even some of it, has to do with kind of the loss of, once the mafia was sort of, I don't know what you call them, cobbled after the commission case and the subsequent stuff, like not just the mafia crime itself, but the trickle down, the corruption of the cops with it. Like, do you think that made a big effect on the decline of crime?
You know, and that question you asked before about why crime's down, it's a very hard thing to put a finger on it. I mean, it's good policing and all that. I love neighborhood policing like they have today. With the community, have the community more involved. And obviously the police department used to be probably 98% white, right? You know, kids from Long Island. Now it's, I think, 65% other than white. And it's, Asian, you have, African American, Asian,
Hispanic, all that.
Yeah. You can't call them Chinese anymore, right?
That's I think you can call them Chinese. You can't say Oriental, but
you have to say Asian.
We don't know.
You can say Chinese. They're from China.
Singapore.
But then again, when you go to a fucking Chinese restaurant, what do you eat? Chinese food.
What's Chinese? Yeah. But they're calling themselves Chinese.
Yeah.
You don't know if the guy's Japanese or not.
Yeah. Can you tell the difference?
Sometimes.
How can you tell the difference between a Korean, Chinese, or Japanese?
A lot
Koreans
of times,
tend to be bigger. They're like more mountain. Yeah. They're basically, they come from the mountains of whatever. So like, I think there's
fucking what mountains?
There's mountains in China. Himalayas or whatever.
You just said from Korea.
I know, but there's mountains in Korea, I think. I'm not an anthropologist.
You can't tell the fucking difference.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Usually taller.
Was Gotti a guy that, when you knew him from the, seemed like he was going to be, like we always talk about it in comedy, we'll always be like.
No, when I knew him first, I didn't see that when I was a kid. I thought Joey Scarpa.
Yeah, he'd be the guy.
But Joey Scarpa ends up getting machine gunned down in a Colombo war. They killed him in his driveway. They shot him down with a machine gun.
How old was he?
Oh, well, 91. He had to be in his late 40s.
So this level of violence is like, people don't even understand New York. People really, I mean, from the New York that you grew up in and the New York that you lived in and the one that you policed, nobody living here today has really any, I mean, you're talking about, you're going machine gun and driveway. People have no idea.
Well, my last case was I walked in. There were 10 dead people, all shot in the fucking head, including 8 children. I mean, stuff like that you don't forget.
Right.
I tracked down a scumbag that did it. And guess what? He just got out of fucking jail in January after killing 10 people. Palm Sunday Massacre. And this fucking animal's out.
Why does that happen? Why is he out?
Why does that happen?
Yeah.
You answer that question to me. You answer that question. Why is he fucking out?
Yeah.
You had him dead to right? Like, all the evidence? It wasn't like
Then you have Herman Bell gunned down 2 cops. He's out. Whoopee.
These parole boards are—I don't know what's going on.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. How did you get involved with Rao's? That's a famous Italian restaurant in New York. I'm a big food guy. I'm a big restaurant guy, so I have to ask you about this. It's like I've been there once. I went there once. I loved it. The meatballs were amazing. I loved everything that seafood pasta salad. Seafood salad. The meatballs. We did the whole thing. The chicken. Even the black raspberry ice cream is amazing.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
How do you get involved in that? And for people who don't know anything about Rao's, tell, because it's the most exclusive restaurant in the world.
Rao's restaurant in East Harlem was first opened in 1896. People have to understand, East Harlem was a melting pot of the Italians when they came over from Italy on the boats. Each street, like you had from Naples, Sicilian, what's that place with the fucking boats?
Venice.
Venice and all that, right? And what happens is they kind of, when they get off the boats, they'd come there to certain streets, and then they would migrate to Queens, Ozone Park, Bensonhurst, the Bronx, and this was the melting pot. So fast forward to the 1920s and 30s, you had all the mob guys going in there, Flying Dutchman, Lucky Luciano. They used to all go to Rao's. And then you had Vinnie Rao was there, Joey Rao. And as the years went on, the neighborhood kind of changed. It became very Hispanic then. Then they built the projects in the 1950s, and a lot of the Italians started moving out. Now, when I was a kid, I used to see my great aunt came from 116th Street. We used to go there. I used to look inside there. It was all these guys smoking cigars, and that was the joint. I used to, as a kid, I looked in there. I said, you know, this place looks kind of cool. Now I become before I become a cop, I'm driving Ralph Scopo when I'm 17 years old up to meet Fat Tony Salerno. So you got to understand, I met all these guys through Ralph Scopo.
Right.
So I used to look in there. Now I become a cop, and I start going up to Rao's, probably 1973. I go in there, and I'll never forget the place. It's just the coolest looking joint. Looked like it was out of the 1930s, 40s, 50s. And I'm standing at the bar drinking. Next thing is I meet this guy, Frankie. God rest his soul. Frankie died. He was my best friend. And he goes, yeah, I'm a singer. I'm going to stay for 2 weeks. He never fucking left. And he became the owner of the place. And it just became a joint where we'd be coming in there, my partner, Tommy Collar, and we'd be on one end. All the wise guys would be on there, and we'd buy drinks back and forth for each other. It was like this crazy relationship because we had nothing to do with organized crime.
Right.
We would get the street scumbags, the murders on the street, robberies. So now 1977 comes, and Frankie says, you know, Bo, you've been coming up here a lot, and, you know, you want to take – I'm going to give you this table. What night would you like? I says, I like Thursday night.
So he Great
gave,
night.
He gave me the original table. And I had a big top mate on there in the front. Who have I had on that radio? I've had in that table Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, every business guy in the world, Kenny Langone, Crandall Grasso, everybody. Then actors, DiCaprio, of course, Bruce Willis, Denzel Washington, when I did the movie, The Bone Collector, him and Angelina Jolie.
Now, people don't understand, you can't go to Rao's. You can't make a reservation. There's, what, 12 tables, 15 tables there?
No, they had, let me see. You have 9 tables.
9 tables, and they're owned like condominiums.
Yeah, like some guy gets it every other month on Tuesday.
Right.
And I have it every Thursday since 1977.
Wow. And that's, so it's essentially a private club, and you can bring guests, and you can give your table out to people. But
well, I don't give it. You know what I do? I give it to charities.
Right.
I started, it's a $10,000 bid. I don't get the money. The charity does. Sure. And I get $25,000 for the charity every time they bid it right up.
Wow.
Every now and then some couple will go into the bar and they'll have a couple of drinks. And if there's an open table, sometimes, not always, but every now and then they'll let someone eat there.
Well, the big tops, you know, the round tables, they don't flip them that often. But
right
now I see they've been flipping the boots. You know, booths, right. The booth people.
It is the coolest of all the restaurants, and I've eaten in all of the restaurants in New York City. I've eaten in most of the 5-star restaurants. It is the single coolest place I've ever sat down to have a meal in my life.
Music, atmosphere.
I mean, everything.
And what happened in 1978, I think it was, Mimi Sherding, I think, of the New York Times.
Yeah, New York Times went in there, yeah.
She wrote an article, and after that, the place went berserk.
Yeah.
And everyone, like I said, Warren Buffett's been there 4 times with me, never picked up the fucking check.
But I tell you,
it's a magical place.
Yeah. It really is.
And it's like you walk in, and here was the thing I was trying to say. It was around since 1896, but Frankie Pellegrino, the owner, was like in the Dark Ages. Rao's was in the Dark Ages, and it was like Michelangelo and Leonardo da Vinci, and he was such a Renaissance guy. Frankie was an actor, a singer, a fucking wannabe politician, but he was the greatest entertainer of people, and it just became like spectacular.
Yeah, it is one of those places where he combined all those skills to make, you know, the ultimate supper club, really probably in the world in terms
it's
of-
It's the most exclusive in the world because you just can't get a table.
Right, and when you do, there's you feel special there in a way you don't feel special other places.
When I was in the real estate business, we bought the Woolworth building there, the Daily News building with Steve Witkoff, my partner. It's just a magical, special place, man.
Yeah.
Deals were done on that table.
Do you get when you go there? What are your things to eat?
Nah, I get the same basic everything. Shit all the time. Yeah. You start out with the fish salad. The fish salad is lobster, crab, scugil, calamari, and it's in a lemon olive oil. Then we get the tomatoes with the mozzarella, and then we get the baked clams.
Yeah.
And then I get the roasted peppers are outrageous.
So good. Yeah.
And then we jump into the macaronis. My favorite macaroni is the fazilis with the cabbage and sausage. Very good with the red sauce. And the meatballs, of course, you throw in there.
Meatballs are great.
Then you have the lemon chickens is the
that's what I
signature.
Have. Yeah.
Then I get a steak pizziola.
Right.
And then I got shrimp a la beau. That's a lightly breaded shrimp.
Shrimp a la beau, is that you?
A la beau is my thing, right?
Yeah.
And then you get the big salad, the broccoli rabe, and then you get the homemade ice creams. And, and then you gain about 50 fucking pounds.
Yeah, it's amazing. It really is an amazing spot. And it's a wild thing that you're that's of all the stories when you talk about it, it's like if there's a physical representation of all your stories, it's that restaurant.
I just wish that, I had so many people up there. When DiCaprio calls me up all the time, he wants to go up there. Never invites me to his fucking joint, so he calls me up to go up there. And then, like I said, Buffett called me up the last time, it was 2 years ago, right before I was running for mayor. And he goes, how's that Italian restaurant? He says, it's good. He goes, I want to come up there with Charlie Rose. This before Charlie got fucking whacked. And so I said, I got 4 people coming, some clients. I'm like, you're welcome to join me. Like you always are, my guest. And he was silent. Next to his secretary goes, oh, no, Mr. Buffett wants your table. I said, well, tell Mr. Buffett I do no work with him, and I got clients that are going to be there. And like always, he could be my guest. I never heard from him. Fuck him.
Oh, that's funny. That's so funny. Fuck him. Do you go to Parkside, too? That's another one of my favorites.
I know Tony very well.
Yeah, I love Parkside.
Years ago, I used to go to Parkside.
Yeah. That's the food I grew up with. Like, that's good. You're coming from Long Island, all my best friends being Italian. Those are the restaurants that I grew up with. That's the, Piccola Venezia and Astoria. I don't know if you
love Piccola.
Okay. Yeah. That's another one of my spots.
I used to go there as a cop.
Yeah. That's an old school spot. And you walk in there, that place is unchanged.
Well, you know your fucking restaurant.
Oh, I know Well, my uncle's a director of operations for Smith & Walensky's, all those guys.
Oh, wow.
All those big steakhouses. Quality meats, quality Italian.
I used to go there before then I became a Sparks guy.
Right.
Now I own a piece of the Wolfgang's over in Jersey.
I love how you've taken the tour of New York. Yeah. But you went to Smith's early on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I used to love the ribeye Cajun style.
Yeah, that's what they do. That's what they do. Yeah. It's such a big thing in New York is going out to eat. Now, Sparks is obviously famous.
Smith & Wesnski had a great reputation. I'm going back a ways into the 70s.
Yeah, they were around. They were around
and
early.
And then Sparks was good. And the whacking fucking Castellano out front. They didn't even let Castellano and Bellotti get their fucking dinner.
Yeah,
he should have waited till at least they ate and then shot him.
Is the mob completely dead now? Is it completely gone?
It's pretty much decimated. Pretty much.
Does the rise of gangs that are less organized and more ruthless, is that better or worse? And how to cot like an MS-13? It seems like there's no order. It seems like it's all chaos.
I totally agree. At least with the mob, you know, they kept it pretty much amongst themselves. They'd whack each other. But then again, you know, if you owed money, you could get fucking good beaten too. So
the film Bad Lieutenant is, I imagine, loosely based on your career, right?
Oh, I was not a fucking junkie like Harvey Keitel. It was a fucking junkie, heroin addict. That wasn't based on Bo.
Did he spend any time with you?
I'm in the movie.
Oh, you are? I never know.
I played a sergeant in a movie.
Oh, so I gotta watch it.
And my little daughter is the 2-year-old little daughter of Harvey Keitel. Now she's a school teacher getting married in November.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
At the castle, at Gary's place.
Now, tell everybody you've got a show, because I know we're going to let you go. You're amazing. You have an open invitation to come back anytime. You really are. You are, as we knew you would be. You're a wealth of information about New York, and you know a New York that a lot of people don't know that's kind of disappearing. Things like Rao's are the last of it. Yeah. And it's sad because when you walk around Manhattan and everything's a Chase Bank or Dwayne Reed or these a million restaurants that all look the same, that all serve the same 10 things.
If you don't get run down on one of these fucking motorized bikes.
Yeah. So you have a new show on Gas Digital, and what do you talk about on your show? Just more of
everything. Like I had Danny A, you know, from the clubs, the nightclub kid.
Yeah.
And now he's a producer, director. I just did his movie called Appalachia about the mob meeting back in 1956, upstate New York. Steven Schripper, Anthony Scaramucci. I have a long list of people that we've had on the show, and it's really taken off. And I tell you know why I enjoy it? Because I could be real. I could be Bo. Like when I ran for mayor, I had to watch every fucking thing I said. And I said that one judge looked like de Blasio's wife. Right away, I'm a fucking racist. If you put the picture next to each other, they look like sisters.
Right.
But because they were black, I'm a fucking racist.
Right.
So on my podcast, I'm able to be Bo. Yeah. And I love it. And I just open up in my podcast. And you know what?
Listen, Bo Dito, thank you so much for coming. And you are one of the best. You are. The podcast is called One Tough Podcast. And you're one tough guy.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate you coming in. We really love you. You have an open invitation anytime you want to come in. People should check out your show on Gas Digital. And, you know, you're the man. And we look forward to it. I'm going to get one of your books because I haven't read them.
And all the young guys out there in college and everything, just master fucking bait. That's
yes,
all.
I
go
agree.
Watch a video, master bait. It's the same feeling anyway.
Yeah.
It's over. You're not going to get attacked.
Right.
I think masturbation will come back in real, real hard. Hard. I'll see you guys.
Thank you so much. The great Bo Dito, everybody. One of the best. Check out his podcast on Gas Digital Network. One Tough Podcast with the great Bo Dito. Very funny. Very smart. A lot of stuff there. There's a lot of stuff there, and really fun to have him on the show. And he's a guy that I'd seen. I kind of grew up watching, you know, Bo on TV, and he's been in movies and he's written books. And it was really good to get the opportunity to kind of talk to him here about some of the things. I think Ray remembers when I went to Rayo's, what a big deal it was.
Yeah, you're excited.
Our mutual friend took me.
Yeah, we all should go unnamed.
She'll go unnamed, but it was how long is that friendship? A year and a half? I had to stay friends with her.
Put a lot working.
I mean, Rayo's is a real situation. I mean, that was intense.
Look.
Yeah,
he's a charismatic guy.
Listen, he comes from a different time.
Sure. Right.
So, I mean, what a nice episode up until, you know what I mean? Just a lovely episode up until the end, you know?
It was interesting.
I want to go to Rayo's! Check out One Tough Podcast on Guest Digital. That's Bo Dietl's podcast. TimDillonComedy.com. Dates are up. I will be in Toronto at Just for Laughs. I'll be at the Brokerage in Long Island. I'll be at Laugh It Up at Poughkeepsie and Mahoney's October 13th, okay? McGuire's in Bohemia, Long Island, October 26th. October 27th, two shows at the Brokerage in Long Island. November 1st through the 3rd, I will be at the Woo Ha Ha. It's a new comedy club in Worcester, Massachusetts, Worcester, Mass. And October 4th through the 6th, I'll be at Philly at Helium Comedy Club for the first time. Tim J. Dillon, D-I-L-L-O-N on Instagram and Twitter. Please follow me there. I put up all those shows. The Great Ray Kump, what do you have going on?
At Ray Kump on Facebook and Instagram. Got my new solo podcast coming soon. In a week or two, I'll drop some details soon on that. Our contest is now over. Basically, you have till, I guess, whatever the iTunes thing is. Because we said last week was the last one, so a week from Sunday, this past Sunday, is over. So if you're hearing this on iTunes, it's done. If you're hearing it live, you still have a couple of days.
Oh, you still have a couple of days.
Well, because the cap is, there. I guess next week I'll draw a winner. You get a custom painting by me. And that's it for this week.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Goodbye.